in the face of wealth is changing, it's becoming younger, more diverse. And I think the financial professionals that can adapt to the changing face of wealth, that can understand, be that financial coach and help manage, an individual's entire financial picture are going to be the ones that are successful. And talk to them in a language they understand, avoiding jargon.
Welcome, my friend, to the Conversations for Financial Professionals podcast. I'm your host, Dominique Henderson. And as a veteran of the financial services industry, I was curious to find out why, despite all the good that financial professionals do, that yet the term financial advisor would clear the room so fast at a dinner party. Why was this? And what was this gap between consumers of financial services and the providers of those services? In this podcast, I seek to close this gap by having forward-moving conversations to advance the profession of giving financial advice and provide tools to the next generation of financial professionals to serve their clients at the highest level. You see, as providers of financial services, we have the awesome privilege of partnering with consumers to help change family trees, normalize the creation of wealth, and help the industry as a whole do less harm and more good. So it's time to sit back and enjoy the conversation. Continuing with theme 6 of Conversations for Financial Professionals, the talent pipeline in financial services, we got the pleasure to talk with Jean Dunn. During Jean's time with T. Rowe Price, she has developed a really great reputation for her work around being prepared for the next wave of wealth. In this conversation, we got a chance to talk about the wealth transfer, its diversity, its demands, and the things that aspiring financial professionals, as well as existing financial professionals, should be aware when trying to serve their ideal client. We discussed the makeup of financial professionals within the industry and how this wealth transfer is different than ones in the past. We also talk about the different wants and demands of the consumer of financial services going forward. We also discuss whether or not those demands are really shaping the way that the industry currently gives advice. And finally, we do a lightning round around various financial topics, terms, and definitions. One for the ages that you don't want to miss. It's time to sit back and enjoy the conversation. Welcome to another Conversations with Financial Professionals podcast, where we are shaping the next generation of advice. And today we got a special one. Jean Dunn of T. Rowe Price. Jean, you are the Vice President of T. Rowe Price Investment Services, Inc., and an insights leader in the U.S. The U.S. Intermediaries Product and Marketing Offer Management Group. As a frequent speaker at industry and client events, Jean, you not only create thought leadership, but you also provide consultative services to financial professionals, sharing industry best practices from leading strategic marketing teams to helping the financial planning community understand and better serve diverse communities. I love that. Your goal has been to arm financial professionals with actionable insights, tactics, and tools that they need to help their clients reach their goals. You are focused on helping financial professionals understand and adapt to the changing face of wealth in the United States and is passionate about researching how the shifts in intergenerational wealth and family dynamics influence how Americans save, invest, and plan for their future. 20 plus years in the financial industry, you joined T. Rowe Price in 2004. You are licensed with your 6, 7, 63, and 24. And you are a certified financial planner professional. Thank you for visiting us today in The Deposit. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, absolutely. I was telling you in the in what I call the virtual or digital green room before we got started that I wanted to tell the story of how I came across you and your material. It was like, you know, every couple of years you got to do your CE for the CFP, and I'm sitting on the FPA website and I'm like, okay, what do I want to learn about this year? And I saw this next wave of generational wealth, and I was like, huh, that's kind of interesting because everybody has a different take on this. Same kind of theme, but different perspectives. And I was so intrigued with the presentation when you went through it. And I was like, you know what? I think this would be a really, really good podcast topic. Let me just reach out to her and see if she would be open to do it. And you did. And so I'm so happy that you're here also.
I'm happy to be here. And I'm actually happy to hear that when folks are getting their CE, they're actually listening to the presentation. Sometimes you wonder. So that makes me feel good.
I will admit, I've been guilty of just kind of, you know, playing it along and answering the questions later. I will say that. But no, we're going to get into this topic of preparing for the next generation of wealth transfer. And I'm really happy to get your insights on this because, you know, this is, I don't even think this is the elephant in the room, but, you know, the people are listening to this and, you know, I am a Black man, African-American man, you are a white woman. I think this is the type of conversations we have to have cross ethnicity, cross gender type of thing so that we can really, really move the ball up the field, right? I don't know, that's probably an interesting opening thought, but I wonder if you have any feedback for that.
Yes, I mean, I completely agree. If you look at the composition of financial professionals, 86% are men. The number of diverse financial professionals is in the low single digits. And we haven't seen those numbers change substantially. I know at least looking at women, that number hasn't changed over the last 30 years since I've been in the business. And so I'm excited to talk to you today about how we can start to move the needle. We have to look more like the clients that we serve.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because that is changing. But let's define some terms. You know, we have these different terms. Everybody uses maybe a slightly different dictionary, if you will. What is in at least in your talks about this next generation wealth transfer? How are we defining wealth? Because, you know, some people look at income. Some people look at, you know, assets versus, you know, liabilities, net, you know, kind of give us a indication of what we mean when we say wealth.
Sure. In the research that you saw on the FPA website, specifically that what we call next wave is high earners. So we were looking at income only, top 10% earners under the age of 50. And we just did both qualitative and quantitative research on this group. One of the reasons we focused on it, I've seen more on investable assets versus income. And when you look at the wealth transfer that's coming, we know by 2030, millennials and Gen X are going to hold more wealth in this country than prior generations, baby boomers specifically. But when you look at investable assets, I think your research naturally skews older. So that's one of the reasons we focused on income.
No, that makes sense. That makes sense. I think another thing I want to bring into this, which I kind of headed off with what we started about as we talk about the diversity of this transfer, is not just the demographics of it. I know everybody talks about the demographics of it. So we're talking about, you know, ethnicity and origin, national origin, all this kind of stuff. But I also want to talk about, because you brought this out, when you talked about, you know, the millennial and the Gen X versus baby boomer, I want to talk about the psychographic, the type of person that's receiving this wealth and what they're aspiring to versus when you and I first got into business. You know, it was all about just gathering assets. Let's get, you know, millions of dollars and whatever. But clients nowadays are, I think they're different. So I want to bring that in, because what have you found out in the study that you guys did about the type of person that is receiving this wealth?
Yes, absolutely. They are really different. And we actually had a control group in our research. We called them traditional clients that were older and had substantially more assets. The next wave of wealth, as we define it, feels very different about their money than prior generations. First of all, they don't feel wealthy. And we've seen this in studies. I think it's like two-thirds of individuals that earn between $100,000 and $250,000 a year classify themselves as middle class. And when we looked a little bit deeper into the Gen X and millennials specifically, you know, we all have our own attitudes and beliefs about money based on experiences. And this group has had a really different experience than baby boomers. You think
Talk about it. Yeah.
Yeah. You think about September 11th, you know, decades old wars, the global financial crisis. This next wave of wealth, again, high earners under age 50, have what we call a scarcity mindset. They have more in common with my great aunt Gladys, who grew up in the Great Depression. She never threw away anything. They're savers, and they don't necessarily have that abundance mindset, which I think a lot of financial professionals are used to, because that's really what baby boomers, I think, brought to the table.
That's interesting. You said savers, and I was like, hoarders, maybe? But but you bring up something very interesting, because I think that really changes the type of dynamic of financial professional that needs to work with that person, and totally changes how I was brought into the business. I wonder, you know, what are your thoughts on that, and that skill set that that financial professional would need to have in order to deal with that type of client?
Yeah, I agree. And when we compared this group with traditional clients, you know, traditional clients, baby boomers especially, were looking for financial professionals as experts. And when we, especially in our qualitative research, when we talked to these younger individuals, these younger investors, they said, I'm looking for a coach. I want to know this person as an individual, not necessarily as an expert. I want them to not just look at my investments. They want them to look at their entire financial picture, because they have twice as many pain points as traditional clients when it comes to money. They have these multiple competing financial priorities. They don't know where to start. And they want someone to help them not just manage their investments, but almost be a coach, challenge their behavior, help them have new choices, maybe make better choices going forward. So I agree with you. I think it's a really different relationship, and successful financial professionals are gonna have to adapt.
Do you think we're ready for that? This industry, like, I mean, I know it's coming on us. We're one of those industries where we don't roll with the punches. We tend to be really, really behind the eight ball. And I wonder what your thoughts are of how prepared we are to have those type of conversations. I know I've been having them. My RIA is only 6 years old, although I've been in the business a lot longer. But I wonder what, when you talk to, because you, in the seat you sit in, you see a lot of advisors. What is the kind of the climate? What are you getting as far as their preparedness for that type of client?
Sure. I know you know this, I think different financial professionals have different levels of preparedness. So especially those that have been doing comprehensive financial planning in the past, I think are better prepared than some other financial professionals. What I see as heartening is that when we've been sharing this research with financial professionals, I have heard a lot of curiosity from financial professionals. I think they know this is coming. I think some of them have experienced it a little bit and are struggling and are noticing that the ways that they've grown their business isn't necessarily working with this new generation. So I think there's motivation to change, which to me is probably the most important part, right?
No, you're right. Not sitting back with your arms folded, like, why is this happening to me? Because I think there's, it's an interesting thing. I think where we've seen with other industries, for instance, I'll give a couple examples. You know, we move from going to the grocery store with a little buggy to having our groceries delivered. Like, that became the norm. You know, DoorDash, all these other things. And it's almost like the consumer preference was forced on those industries. And I think that's what's happening to financial advice too, is the consumer saying, this is how I want financial advice rendered to me. This is the interaction I want, because of all these other amenities that I have in my life and that I'm used to. And I think, like you said, it's incumbent upon the today's financial professional to realize that and meet the client where they are. I wonder if your study included anything around the types of tools to accommodate some of these things. Like, you know, we were kind of talking about this before we started, like with Zoom and, you know, virtual meetings. Did you guys get into any of that in the research?
We didn't necessarily get into Zoom and virtual meetings, but one thing we thought was really interesting, because I heard this from a lot of financial professionals, is, oh, this younger generation doesn't even want to talk to me. They just want a robo-advisor. And I think that, to me, was the biggest insight, is this group is actually desperate to talk to a financial professional. Again, a robo-advisor can't solve the fact that someone's saving for retirement and saving for education, and they're not quite sure if they're doing either in a good way.
Good point.
So they want to talk to someone. But at the same time, you go back to that scarcity mindset. The next wave of wealth doesn't feel wealthy. And so many of them, I think, are a little bit intimidated, or maybe to say it another way, aren't quite sure if they qualify for the services of a financial professional. So there's, I think, a little bit of a barrier. They want to talk to someone, but these are really successful people. They earn more than 90% of the population. They're successful in their jobs. So they don't want to go up necessarily to a financial professional, meet with someone, and realize they don't qualify for their services. Mm. It's almost like they view working with someone like you as being a member of an exclusive club. And they don't know if they qualify. So that makes them a little hesitant to even reach out, which I think is something we're going to have to overcome.
No, I'm glad you went there. I think firm minimums aside, I think there's even a perception amongst that group of what it looks like to even interact with a financial professional, right? Right. Like, I bet we can go up to someone on the street and ask 10 different people, what does a financial advisor do? And we'll get 10 different answers, right? Yeah. And it's even like financial advisor or financial planner, like, or financial coach. Like, aren't they all the same? You know, we would get into all that. So our industry definitely has to do a better job of kind of drawing the lines along how we can be approached and what we do specifically to help the client. Because I think there's been so much focus on asset gathering. Everybody's like, well, I don't really have a lot of assets, so maybe I'm not supposed to work with that type of person. Is that what you've maybe found in that group or the control group?
Yes. And one thing I'm really passionate about is the language our industry uses. I messed that up. The language our industry uses is really jargon heavy. Mm. And oftentimes, especially with folks with lower levels of financial literacy, they may have different meanings associated with words that we use every day. So many firms are called wealth managers. So we tested very specific words with our research.
Oh, this is going to be interesting. Go ahead.
There's so many firms that are called wealth managers. And in our qualitative research, you know, so many of these folks said, well, I'm not wealthy. You know, a wealth manager works with billionaires and folks with hundreds of millions of dollars. I can't work with that person. That's not for me. So to me, something that means something to us, which I think is much more inclusive than folks that have billions of dollars, means something different to this next wave of wealth.
No, right. So that's almost like a marketing issue, too, if you think about it, because the ability to be approached by someone that needs your help. I don't know. There's just so many different angles at this. I wonder what word or words did you guys test for words that did seem more appealing in that psychographic?
We did. And to your earlier point around, you know, there isn't one single definition of a financial advisor or financial planner. Those two words resonated more than wealth manager. So financial advisor, financial planner. But whenever you started to get into terms that I would identify as jargony. So another great example is the word fiduciary. You know, in the industry, we think that's a great word. And if you think about the definition of a fiduciary, it is someone that, you know, is legally required to act in a client's best interest. But when this group sees a word that they don't understand, it's almost automatically off-putting to them. They think, oh, that word seems almost corporate. Is someone trying to put something over on me? So they actually did not identify with that word. Of course, when they find out what it means, they appreciate it more. But, it, you know, so when we're trying to describe what we're doing, it's not enough just to say you're a fiduciary, if that's something that you are. It's it's actually to say, I have your best interest in mind. That is an obligation that I've taken on, and that's very important to me. So the more we can use plain language, I think the more we're going to be able to connect. And that's hard for us, I think, especially folks that have been in the industry a long time.
Yeah, no, I would agree. First of all, our training doesn't talk about it. Just what I call the bedside manner of this job, right? Where you're just kind of, you're guiding, you're a teacher, you have this level of empathy for someone that, like you said earlier, may feel intimidated. Right? This could be the first time that they're having this type of discussion, even though this is, you know, let's say generationally, the richest that they've ever been, doesn't really mean anything, because their level of financial literacy or financial education could be at a point where there's just these gaps. And I think it's even more on us as the professional. You know, George Kinder said something when we were having a conversation. He said, you got all your degrees, you have all your licenses and your knowledge and your experience. He's like, why would you use that against a client? He's like, you have the advantage. He's like, you need to be the point of, you know, listening, of probing, asking more in questions to draw out of them what they probably, you know, are probably pretty hesitant to articulate, and maybe even embarrassed, depending on their money story. What are your thoughts around that?
Yeah, first of all, I love that you mentioned George Kinder. He's been a huge influence on me. He's the reason I've kind of gone down this path around the changing face of wealth and trying to help financial professionals connect with individuals. So he to me is really amazing. And to your point, it's not just about helping clients achieve their financial goals. It's meeting them where they are and simplifying complex concepts. To me, is one of the best things that we can do. And that's one of the reasons, I do what I do. I do all this research and try to share it with financial professionals.
With all the distractions and things vying for your attention on a day-to-day basis, when do you have time to consider what your purpose is? Have you thought about what it is going to take to achieve your goals? After having dozens of conversations with clients, I decided to provide a simple framework on how you can answer those questions. That framework is contained in my book called Assess, Address, and Adjust, a practical guide to becoming unstuck and achieving your goals. Look, if you've ever felt that you're losing the time for money trade and want to start winning in the next 30 days with real practical tips to improve your situation, or if you're not motivated to push through the day because you have a job you don't enjoy, a relationship you're ready to get out of, or just feel like you're not where you want to be in life, this book is for you, my friend. If you're ready to change that uncomfortable level of dissatisfaction that's currently going on in your life, and you want the tools to help you get unstuck, then head on over to domhendersonsr.com/theunstuckbook. And for a limited time only, you can get a signed copy by yours truly. Now let's get back to the conversation. What do you think, if you had maybe like a top three list of things that this next wave is going to change about the industry that, like, tomorrow's financial professional just needs to really be aware? If you're going into this industry, things you need to be aware of, what would you say those things are?
Okay, this is hard. This is hard to pick three, Tom, but I'll try.
We got to narrow it down, Gene. We got to narrow it down.
So number one, and I maybe sound like a broken record on this, but to me, the fact that, you know, the next wave of wealth is going to be more diverse than any other group. The percentage of high earning diverse households is growing at a faster rate than high earning white households. And so we as an industry, I think this is a huge thing, is we have to change and reflect this changing face of wealth. So to me, it's going to reflect the composition of financial professionals over time. Secondarily, one thing I think is really interesting, and you kind of mentioned this before, you were talking about how consumers have changed preferences a little bit. I think the way that we pay for goods and services outside of the financial industry has changed dramatically in a really short period of time. A couple of years ago, if you would have told me that I was paying YouTube for content and using like a third-party provider like Venmo or Zelle that I'd never heard of to actually make financial transactions, I probably would have laughed at you. Both of those things are something I do today. And when I look at how we, how the evolution of how individuals pay for financial advice, we've been on this 3-decade-long conversion from commission to fee-based. But when we actually did research with the Next Wave of Wealth, they were much more likely to prefer subscription or a flat fee for financial advice versus an asset-based fee. So, and I'm not necessarily saying that that is what everyone is going to move to, but I think financial professionals are going to have to look at different levels of service. Just like cell phone providers offer different types of plans, perhaps a subscription-based fee for someone that's really wealthy, but has a lot of that wealth tied up in a business, doesn't have necessarily a lot of financial assets, investable assets, but needs financial advice. Maybe a subscription or fee-based is good for them. And maybe there's a transition to a different type of payment as their needs evolve. So I recognize that that's probably a little bit controversial, but I think.
No, I'm glad you're bringing this up because I think it's, you know, it's one of these chicken and egg things because a lot of financial professionals have, let's just be honest, a boilerplate ADV because that's what they know will allow them to get approved by the regulators because the regulators essentially say you can do financial services in this state or wherever. But then, and I think you know this too, so I'm not necessarily giving any new news. If you were ever to have a conversation with the regulator about how a financial practice is ran, they're like, I don't know. Here's the state manual on it. So they're approving our businesses, but they don't know how our businesses run. And when they see something that's a little different, not necessarily bad for the consumer, because I do get, you know, where regulation is useful. It's to protect the consumer. But if no one's trying to do harm to the consumer, what are we protecting? You know, then we just get things lost in translation. I've worked with several advisors to help them start their firms, and every regulator in each state wants to call subscription, retainer, you know, all these different things. They're like, well, what are you doing? You know, so it's like we need them to get up to speed too on that. But I totally agree. We got to have different models to be flexible for the way that or where the client's at. We've talked about that. So no, that's excellent. So no, you gave me 3 things. So that the flexibility of payments for service, I'm sorry, give me that list again.
Composition of financial professionals. I think that was just 2. I think I'm giving you 2.
Okay, yeah, it's composition of financial professionals. And let's double click on that for just a second. If we're looking at that, like the next wave of wealth is going to be more diverse. So if we have single digits of diverse financial professionals, obviously we just need more people serving those people. Is that because consumers are generally wanting to work with someone that looks like them? Is that what you guys found?
A couple different things. I think it's more complex than that. So I would say, you know, every individual has a different set of preferences. So I don't want to do any generalizations, but some people definitely want to work with individuals that maybe not only look like them, but share the same experiences that they have. And to me, when you're thinking about financial planning and talking to people about money, there are so many impacts of your own attitudes and beliefs and experiences that impact your decisions around money. And having a greater understanding of a greater level of experience can help that financial professional better serve them.
No, and I totally agree. I totally agree.
Go ahead.
No, it's just one of those things where, like, so for instance, you know, you might have a client that, you know, wants to give to their church or give to their family. You know, these are things that are different by the way you bring in your cult, the way you're brought up in your culture, in your community. And if you don't understand it, you just don't get it. And as a client, it's like, I don't want to have to talk. I don't want to educate you on that necessarily. It's, if you come to the table already knowing that, it's like, oh, okay, that feels better. And I can trust you quicker and everything else. So I'm glad you brought that out because that is a big thing. I think some people look at that on the surface and just like, you know, you just want somebody that looks like you. No, it's deeper than that. It goes way deeper than that.
And actually, in the research that we did, we did something that's called oversampling. And that's another technical term, which just means that we had enough level of responses from African-American, Latino and Latina, Asian-American, LGBTQ+, next wave investors, that we could look at differences that they maybe had in terms of their financial priorities, goals, and attitudes that was different than the next wave overall. And we definitely saw some differences, especially with multicultural investors. Building generational wealth is something that is really important to them that we see as less of important in terms of next wave overall. And there's even been some other research that I think is really interesting. When you look at high earning, diverse individuals in this country, the things that they value are hard work and excellence. And if you compare, those are things that are very highly valued compared with high earning white or Caucasian individuals that, you know, value enjoyment and fun. So there's so many different I think, experiences and values that are embedded in different individuals. To your point, I think diversity is only going to help that.
No, I would agree. I didn't think about this before, but I would love for when we air this, for you to share that study, the link to that study, because I think that would be really, really helpful for this audience. I didn't think about that till now. As we kind of bring this into a landing, I want to kind of go with a little different segment that brings all this in kind of off the top of your head. And so I'm going to give you a term or phrase, and you just kind of give me, I really appreciate your thought leadership in this space. And so I want to just kind of know what your thoughts are about these particular things. So first thing that comes to mind when I say financial coaching.
Financial coaching is what this next wave of wealth, high earners under age 50, want from their financial professional.
Amen. Amen. Financial therapy.
So to me, this is a really interesting one. When I think about financial therapy, and I'm sure you've seen a lot of the research into this, you hear about financial professionals not wanting to be therapists. And then you also see therapists not having the expertise to be financial professionals. But we also know the number one source of stress for Americans and the number one source of stress oftentimes for relationships is money and finances. And so there's this whole, you know, field of study to bring financial therapy, bring those two expertises together, right? Therapy and, you know, information and you know, subject matter expertise on financial matters. But at the same time, when I talk to a lot of financial professionals, the first thing they'll say to me is, I am not a therapist, nor do I
but
want to
be. But you are, though. I was like, you are de facto, though. So,
I agree. No, I agree with you. But I also know that there's limits to everything, right? You don't want to necessarily go off your skis. One thing I think is really interesting, and something I don't think that we've done at the industry very much, and something that I want to do more research on is understanding why individuals make financial choices. Because if you think about behavioral finance, the core tenet of behavioral finance is that investors don't behave rationally.
Danny Kahneman's research, yeah.
But no one to me has asked why. Why don't individuals, you know, behave rationally? And if you think about cognitive behavioral therapy, it's all about helping individuals understand why they make the choices they do in their life and give them concrete examples of how to do that. And I feel like there's a parallel, not necessarily making every financial professional be quote unquote a licensed therapist, but if we could help create a framework to help people better understand the relationship with money, why they make irrational decisions, I think we could help everyone be more intentional, aware and intentional of their choices going forward.
You bring up an interesting point. I want to pause right there because even if I think about, you know, prospect theory and Daniel Kahneman's work, it does seem like it is bent towards the, I hate to say the negative, but just definitely the pessimistic side, like how, why people are, or the how around and the what around the suboptimal choice, right? And there could be probably a lot of good data that gets found from not only studying the suboptimal choices that people make when it comes to their finances, but also the stuff that when people do things well, you know, the enjoyment that they have, like looking at both sides of the coin. So I think I follow you on that. What about career changers?
So career changers to me is, I think, one of the biggest opportunities to create more diversity in the financial planning profession. Now, of course, there's been so much development in terms of younger individuals, learning and getting their degrees in financial planning. And I'm excited about that. But I feel like there's somewhere in the middle that's a gap. If you have someone that's retiring, they're not necessarily going to, turn their practice over to someone that just graduated from the university. So to me, career changers is a big thing. And I'll share this with you. At T. Rowe Price, we've been really focused on changing how we recruit to make our associate base more diverse. And the first thing I'll say is, this is a journey. And I think everyone at T. Rowe Price is really focused on committing to diversity, equity, and inclusion. We're not perfect, but we've learned along the way. And one thing I'm really excited about is the fact that we've changed the way that we're recruiting and hiring candidates just in the last couple of years. And when I think about career changers, a couple of things that we've done is been more intentional about how we share opportunities. And to your bringing it back to your first point, LinkedIn is the Starbucks of today. I think LinkedIn and there's other opportunities online to reach out to career changers who perhaps don't have that typical experience that you talked about. Maybe they haven't necessarily been focused on financial planning in the past, but have a lot of skills and value that could make them a great financial professional. So we're re-looking at where we find talent. We also have been re-looking at how we review resumes. And I'm sure you've heard this, removing names from resumes to avoid biases. We also made a change to we used to do one-on-one interviews, and we're trying to be more intentional around who interviews candidates and having two-on-one interviews and having people from different backgrounds that can maybe help each other think about the candidate in a little bit different way. And last but not least, and this to me is the most exciting thing, is we're doing it all with measurement. So a few years ago at T. Rowe, we started with a goal of having a certain percentage of diverse candidates. And while I think that was progress, in the spirit of continuous learning, we realized that wasn't enough. And what's so exciting to me right now is we actually changed from a percentage of diverse candidates to a target of percentage of diverse hires. And when you start to measure that, then you start to have that motivation, that accountability. If you don't hit that number, what do we need to do to change it? And I think that's why we looked at our interview process and have started to make these changes. Is this perfect? Absolutely not. Are we going to learn from it and probably continue to change? Yes. But I think those are the types of things that we're going to have to do to attract those career changers.
No, that's great. My wife and I have a saying. We've been married almost 25 years, and she was like, I don't require perfection. I require honesty, right? So it's just that move towards progress. I love a lot of things you said. I'm going to have to definitely double click there before we move to the next one. But I think in the space I'm in, when I talk to a lot of career changers, I'm specifically thinking about somebody right now who's in a field, very successful in that field, but loves financial planning. And the conversation I had with him is like, you leave healthcare and you can become a financial professional, but then you can go back to healthcare and help those type of people because you know them the best. That's an invaluable skill set that you've used all these years that you can transfer over. And I'm pretty sure you talk to financial professionals all the time. Like when they're talking about new hires, yes, there is that ramping up period, but I can always teach you the technical stuff, right? I can't replace the fact that you've built up social and reputational capital in a whole different career, and you have a rapport with those people that I'll never really have. And then you mix that with the soft skills and the empathy, you probably really got something there. So no, I'm really glad to hear the progress that you guys are making. We'll maybe talk about that a little bit more offline. Last but not least, certified financial planners.
Well, I am a certified financial planner. So I would say, and I've been that, I think I've been a CFP for 20 years now. And I will say, I think that influenced me greatly. It made me think about an individual's entire financial picture beyond just investments. And so I think that's a good thing. What I would say is, you know, certified financial planners aren't universally recognized in the United States like an MD is. And so I think there needs to be continuing work done to help that public that we talked about, that next wave of wealth, understand what a financial advisor or a CFP or, you know, all the different letters behind individuals' names mean. And I think if we could get to one standard that could help the public, I'm not sure if we're going to get there.
You're hopeful like I am.
Yes, I'm hopeful.
No, I think you're right. I think having this regulated at the state level, although I get the reasons for that, is which is really a manpower and a funding issue. But having this regulated at each individual state level, I think, is the mistake, at least from my standpoint. Because that's going to always have disunity because everybody has the way they think about things. So that would be. Go ahead.
Can I interrupt you and share one quick thing?
Yes, please.
I use the term MD, you know, doctors, intentionally, because if you look at like 100, 150 years ago, there was no universal standard to be a doctor. And the words charlatan and quack were actually described about people with varying levels of experience that were attempting to be doctors. And I think to your point, there's one universal standard that isn't specific to states, and you see the trust in individual doctors. And obviously there's challenges, but has gone a long way from being a charlatan and a quack, 100 or so years ago.
That's a good point. I mean, because our industry is really only about 60 years old, the planning profession. And there's a lot. This is a whole nother podcast where we can talk about this 80-year-old law that we have that governs investment advice, yada, yada, yada. Anyways, as you know, this is a podcast to help empower tomorrow's financial professional with tools to serve their clients at the next level. And I wonder, given that, Gene, what word or words of wisdom would you want to leave with our audience?
I would go back to what we talked about before. Again, the face of wealth is changing. It's becoming younger, more diverse. And I think the financial professionals that can adapt to the changing face of wealth, that can understand, be that financial coach and help manage, an individual's entire financial picture are going to be the ones that are successful. And talk to them in a language they understand, avoiding jargon.
Wow. Yes. Yes, wise words, no jargon, just plain English. The thing is, what's the Zig Ziglar saying? People don't care about how much you know until they know about how much you care, right? So you gotta stay at that standpoint. Well, Gene Dunn, I really appreciate your deposit, wealth of wisdom. I feel like we could probably gone on for probably another hour or so, but I'm gonna respect the time and thank you very much. Have a great one.
Yeah, thank you, Dom, for having me. This was a great conversation.
I really hope you enjoy this conversation. Before we go, just a few things. The best way to retain what you just learned is to do more than just listen. You first might want to write down your most important takeaway and then give yourself a deadline to apply it. For bonus points, you might also let someone hold you accountable to that deadline. And remember, the only way more people will know about this podcast is if you share it. You can do that by sharing a link to this episode on your social media or by leaving a review on iTunes so that it reaches a wider audience. I'd appreciate if you took the time to do either or both. And finally, if you'd like to learn more about how Jumpstart can help you become a next generation financial professional or partner with you in finding next generation talent for your organization, send us an email at hello@jumpstartcoachinglab.com, just in case you needed to get a pen to write that down. That's hello@jumpstartcoachinglab.com. Bye for now until our next conversation.